Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Keith Broders, your host for the Friends of Liberty broadcast this evening. My guest is Lawrence Krieger. He's going to be speaking to us this evening about the Spirit of Freedom Tour and also the National Constitution Plaque Initiative. So I think what we'll do here initially is get started is I'd like to introduce to all of you Mr. Lawrence Krieger, and he's going to tell us a little bit of a bio about who he is and how he got involved in this project and what exactly the project is. And so, Lawrence, welcome aboard. Lawrence? I guess we're having a little bit of a problem here. I thought we had Lawrence on the line, but I guess we're going to have to ask him to call in to our switchboard so that we can speak with him. I think maybe we might have him now. Let's see. Is that you, Lawrence?
This is Ray Hayward.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. Is this Keith?
It is. And we're on the line here. Lawrence called in, and I think he's back in business now. I think we'll have
Good.
Him now. And
very cool.
Let's see. Lawrence, are you on board now?
I am.
Well, I introduce you to the listening audience, and they're anxious to hear about who you are and what it is that you've got going here with the Spirit of Freedom Tour and also the Constitution Plaque Initiative.
Okay. I appreciate it. It was nice of you to ask me to come on, and I look forward to this opportunity to have this discussion. A little background, I think that's probably the best way to start. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, born and raised, which gave me a tremendous opportunity because Virginia is one of those states that actually teaches history and civics. In fact, probably one of the few, fortunately or unfortunately. And I did achieve a true understanding and desire to follow history as I went through life. I left Richmond and went up to Rider University in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, which gave me a whole other perspective on education, in that the school systems up there are slightly different than Virginia, especially when it comes to the history and civics areas. After I graduated from college, I went into business with my father, and that was in basically 1969-70. He had opened a, and this is important only to get us to where we are today. He was in the general rental business. He was one of the founders, in fact, one of the first general rental companies in the state of Virginia. And by the time I got involved, he had a series of stores in Central Virginia. Being that I wasn't real excited about tools, he let me get involved in party and banquet equipment, which was nice of him. And as things lead you down the path of life, I suppose, by 1976, we began a relationship with a small company called Sotheby's. We did a small auction for them in Ashland, Virginia, and developed a very close relationship with the president of the company so that we began providing all of the services necessary for putting on their very large estate auctions throughout the United States, which took us to a whole another level. Out of the local regional rental market and into what became the special event industry in the United States. By the late 1970s, early 1980s, we were doing events throughout the United States, weddings in the Hamptons, bar mitzvahs in Miami, and debutante parties in Nashville. And by the early 80s, we got involved with the PGA Tour, doing events like the Honda Classic in South Florida, the Memorial Tournament, the USTA, doing the U.S. Open in New York, and Wilton International down in Key Biscayne. And as things progressed, we ended up being very heavily involved with the entire design and production of the Doug Wilder inaugural in Richmond. He was, of course, the first elected African-American in U.S. history. And after that, George H.W. Bush's inaugural, and actually before that, and after that, Bill Clinton's inaugural. So So we've covered the gambit in special events. And by that time, by the time we got into the late 80s and early 90s, we were one of the largest event companies in America, if not the largest. It brings us to September of 1989 in the Plains, Virginia. The Plains is about an hour and a half outside of Washington and about an hour and a half from Richmond. And we were contracted at that time in 1989 to assist with the production design and production of an inaugural tour event, which was called the Spirit of Freedom Tour. It was a country music festival, and we went in there and did the setup of the staging and all the concession tents and so on and so forth. And I was, putting it mildly, blown away when on the day before the festival was supposed to start, this truck showed up, flatbed showed up, with this 7-ton, 8.5-foot wide by 9.5-foot high monument that was placed in the middle of the field, along with 5 absolutely gorgeous bronze plaques of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. My history background and civics background kicked in, and you know, I lost all track of what was going on. We walked over, started looking at the amazing monument, which had the signatures of every signer of the U.S. Constitution on it. And a couple of hours later, the artist showed up, Brett Livingston Strong, was introduced to him, members of the Bicentennial Commission, which the Bicentennial of the U.S. Constitution, and also members of the American Spirit Foundation out of Los Angeles, and people who had actually put money into promoting this this opportunity. It wasn't until later, actually, and I'll get into that as to how we became even more heavily involved. But the net of it was that this huge country music festival, and it was supposed to be huge, didn't turn out as well as the promoter would have liked. So that after the event was over with, I was asked if I could remove the monument, which I was more than happy to do. And I redelivered it to my corporate headquarters in Richmond, where we placed it on a dais outside of our corporate headquarters so that everyone could see it. And at that point, I had learned that this was the Bicentennial Constitution Monument, or the Spirit of Freedom Monument, which was the name of it. I also further learned that it had been commissioned by the Bicentennial Commission, which was started to celebrate the Bicentennial of the U.S. Constitution, and that the plaques had also been commissioned because they were the only original replicas of the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And I'll get into the details of what that means later. Because of the monument was in our possession at that point, we became heavily involved with the American Spirit Foundation and the investors. And the reality was that they had spent almost 2.5 years trying to do what the Bicentennial Commission had initially determined to do, and that was to take the Constitutional Monument on tour to create an awareness about the Constitution, which was not in this country in 1989, 1990, 1991, and to also take these plaques with that Constitutional Monument to create a fundraising opportunity for different groups and organizations to place these wonderful plaques, a set of 5 plaques, on public buildings throughout the country. And none of that had happened since the inception of this concept by Warren Berger and the Bicentennial Commission, which was in 1986-87. Since we were probably at that time, like I said, one of the largest event companies in America, and because of our background and history had kicked in, I became completely committed to our company making this happen in 1991 and put together the rudimentary elements of what the Spirit of Freedom Tour is today. We actually worked on that through into 1992, working with Brett Livingston Strong, who was the artist, and he was associated with Michael Jackson, the singer, and for reasons I won't get into on that whole subject, the sponsors that were interested in 1992 became less interested, and we were very busy doing events, so I basically had to put it aside for the time being, much to my chagrin. I'm going to skip over the next 10 years because it is, you know, constant. Every once in a while, I go back to trying to bring this out, knowing that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, what they mean and what they mean to Americans and the students in this country is never going to change. But on one morning in September of 2001, while I was watching the disasters on television of September 11th, I made the determination at that point that this was going to go forward. And since September 11th, well, since the beginning of 2002, we've been putting pretty much all of our efforts into bringing this to its rightful place in this country. To go to the next phase of what now we know where we are and why we're here. The Spirit of Freedom Tour, which is the catalyst for taking the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to the students of America, because we believe very strongly that that's where the whole re-understanding about the Constitution, or perhaps the beginning about the Constitution and the beginnings of getting our new generations of Americans involved in government needs to be. The Spirit of Freedom Tour is designed to be not only educational but also entertaining. The tour visits 20 cities a year. It's a traveling exposition center. It's 40,000 square feet, and the structure itself has four halls. Each hall is 9,000 square feet, and each hall leads into a center rotunda, which is where the constitutional National Monument to the U.S. Constitution is placed. And it's the only national monument to the U.S. Constitution. It was made a national monument in 1989. The halls, the four halls as they're designated, that the students will go into. And the way this is structured is that each of the cities we go to will be approached at least a year in advance. We will set up, because this is a free to the school system program, this is a fully sponsored event and free to the school systems. So the school systems will have to commit to delivering their students to the Spirit Pavilion. The tour of the pavilion is a one-hour tour. We bring the students in groups of 750. The entrance hall is full of touchscreen TVs where the students can easily touch the screen and get answers to simple facts about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Patriots, the American fathers of the Constitution and the Revolution. There will also be a number of animatrons in this hall. An animatron, I'm sure you've seen in at Disney World and places like that, are historical figures in this case. Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, et cetera, who will actually speak for 15 seconds with one of their quotes to the children as they pass by them, the students as they pass by them. And I don't want to call them children because they're students. It's for 4th grade to 12th grade students, public and private schools. The group moves from the entrance hall into the rotunda. The rotunda is where they can by the way, the Bill of Rights is the first thing they see as they walk into the entrance hall. If they go into the rotunda, they will they'll see the Constitutional Monument and also the four plaques of the U.S. Constitution. Now, I'll go into the specifics on these plaques as I get into the plaque initiative. To lay out the rest of the tour, they're ushered into an 18-minute movie. It's a movie theater in the hall to the right of the rotunda, which will be which is a movie about an American patriot during the U.S. Revolution, the American Revolution. They will then go from there into a hall of history, which is archival items from that have been replicated from the National Archives, the Constitutional Center, Spirit, the Freedom Foundation, and so on and so forth. In that area, we will have a huge representation of Christie's famous painting of the signing of the U.S. Constitution in 3D, so that the foreground will actually entertain some of the patriots standing on the stage with the background. And as the students come into the hall, one of the patriots will actually step off the stage and give them a tour of the artifacts that are in the hall, such as Washington's carriage that he rode to the first inaugural, and perhaps the pen and quill set that Thomas Jefferson used to write the Declaration of Independence. From there, they're issued into another 750-seat theater where they get a live performance. Again, this is about the beginnings of the Revolutionary War with George Washington and Valley Forge, Constitutional Congress, and on into the freedom for the American colonies. At that point, they leave the structure, get on their buses, and go back to their schools. The concept and the idea is to not to one entertain these students and educate them. As we know in today's society, things have to be visual. They have to be interesting, or unfortunately, I think you lose the impetus of what you're trying to present to these students. In conjunction with the Spirit of Freedom tour in each one of these cities, we are setting up fundraising programs well in advance of the visit to the city by the tour. The fundraising programs is for each school to get involved with raising the $8,500 necessary to place the plaques permanently in their school.
When you plan to have your first tour, or when the tour is scheduled to begin, and what is the first city that is going to host this wonderful event?
It's scheduled right now to begin in September of 2011 in Philadelphia, which is the obvious place that it should begin, as it's the home of the Constitution. It's relative to the sponsorships that come that we're working on bringing in for this tour. We have a very comfortable feeling about that date at this time. The plaques, which play such an important part in this whole program, and really the purpose of the tour is as much to permanently place the Constitution and Bill of Rights in every school in America as it is to tour the country. We're looking at a 3-year minimum to go to 60 different cities. I'm sorry, did you ask me something?
No, I just did. I had some sort of a little technical glitch there for a second.
I'm sorry. So, what we have been encouraged over the last 6 months by any number of principals, of teachers, of people, just everyday people around the country, as to why we can't begin placing these plaques in the schools today. Rather than waiting for the tour to actually begin. And of course, there was absolutely no reason that we couldn't. So we have initiated the National Constitution Plaque Initiative is initiated as of the beginning of April. We are making the plaques available only for donation into schools. We are approaching service organizations such as Rotarians, Kiwanians, Knights of Columbus. We're talking to groups of lawyers, doctors, corporate executives, and we're also involved with the grassroots, the people who find it so important that that we do achieve this. These plaques are, and I need to make it very clear as to what makes them unique. In one time in the history of this country has someone been allowed to go into the vault at the National Archives to replicate exactly what is on these documents, the five pages, the one page of the Bill of Rights and the four pages of the U.S. Constitution. That gentleman was Mr. Strong, and it was obviously done with the backing of the Boston Film Commission. So these plaques are the exact replicas of what you see on the page, including the ink smudges and the parchment where it's come apart a little bit and things like that. If you've ever seen these documents in the National Archives through the very heavy glass that they're protected in today, you'll know that They are in a very poor state of condition. You can hardly read them. So that, of course, that happened because of the many years that they were just left sitting on a table in the sun. And we all know today now that that is not a good thing to do with old documents and paintings and so forth. So these are produced on bronze. These are cast bronze. So when they are installed into a school, they are installed permanently into the schools, into the wall of the school, hopefully in the main hall, so that in the mornings and the afternoons, the students, as they come in, the first thing they see is the Constitution of the Bill of Rights. Along with each one of the sets of plaques, which is again five plaques, is a donor plaque, and the donor plaque obviously will have on it the name or names of the individuals, corporations, or organizations that were instrumental in raising the funds to place these plaques in those particular schools. As you probably know, there are over 500,000 schools in America, and I'm hoping that this project will be going on for many, many years, because I don't think it can be achieved overnight. So we have initiated this. These plaques will begin to be available by no later than the end of April. And we do have individuals who are, right now we've got people in California who are actually throwing parties to raise funds for a particular school. We've got organizations in South Florida that are looking at raising, taking their funds and putting them into half a dozen schools, same thing in Richmond, and so on and so forth. And because this is right at the beginning of this, we're entertaining a lot of other individuals. Every time we talk to someone, they have another idea as to how they can be instrumental in raising the funds to place these plaques into the schools.
Could you direct everybody to your website? Let everybody know how they can go to your website and get kind of a sneak preview. We've got a really wonderful website, and so why don't you tell us a little bit about how they can access more information online?
That'd be fine. It's the website is obviously www.spiritoffreedomtour.org. Again, that's spiritoffreedomtour.org. And in the website, you will be able to see many pictures of the plaques, the monuments, also renderings of the exterior and interior of this wonderful Spirit of Freedom structure, spirit structure. You'll also be able to click on a link that will take you directly to this plaque, National Constitution Plaque Initiative, and it will give you all the particulars, the sizes of the plaques. Understand that the plaques are sized exactly the size of the documents. They have to be. And we've had people come in and look at the plaques and say, well, wow, this is strange because I can read this line really well, but the one underneath is about half that size. Well, you know what? When people wrote in those days, sometimes they had that problem. And you can actually see on the document itself, on the plaque, you can see where the ink was running out, and they dipped their pen and started over again, and all of a sudden you have a lot of ink. So it's really unique to be able to look at this and see that. But at the
Lawrence, could you also one of the things that impressed me when I had the conversation with you the other day is the size and the weight of these plaques. I think this will help people to understand the magnitude of this project. Would you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the dimensions and the weight?
I'd be glad to. I think I'll give you a little bit more information totally on that. These are cast bronze. Now, the process of casting the bronze and replicating them in that way adds a tremendous amount of thickness to it. But what it also does is it gives us the ability to have longevity. Now, we're anticipating that these are going to be in these schools for a long period of time. So we don't want to have a situation where they're going to degrade. When the original plaques were made back in 1986, 87, They were what's called acid etching, and unfortunately, they have certain problems that we've eliminated by doing the cast. The plaques and weight, the Bill of Rights itself weighs 110 pounds. So it's a rather substantial plaque, and it's a piece that measures, and I'm getting the measurements in front of me right now, but the size of it is, as I said, exactly the size of the original documents, and they range in the 2.5 foot by 3 foot range in the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution plaques are slightly smaller because that was the original size of the documents there. When they're installed into the wall, they're done without any nuthead or anything showing. So these are really what we would call tamper-proof as well. They are placed directly into the wall, and they cannot be removed very readily.
So could the Chamber of Commerce in the city buy one of these sets and then have it installed at the city hall? Would that be an appropriate placement?
It would be a very appropriate placement, but at this point, the only way they can buy one is to have it placed in one of their schools. This program is strictly for the school systems, and at this moment, we're only making them available for the school systems. And let's face it, down the road, perhaps many years from now, hopefully they'll be on every public building too. But our belief is that we need to start with the children, we need to start with education, we need to start getting them involved in the entire process of understanding the Constitution and Bill of Rights, Keith. And the reality is that unless they see things today, they don't understand it. So it becomes, I think, very important that we put these things first and foremost in front of the children, and to more or less emphasize, you know, what I believe there. It was probably best said by Warren Berger back in 1989. If you don't mind, I'd like to quote him. Because it's prudent today as well. He said in a quote, talking to a group of students, "Your generation of people have to keep this Constitution and defend it. If you don't know much about it, if you haven't looked at it, if you don't understand how difficult it was for our people to get it in the first place, it's not easy to do a good job of defending it." And that has to be a real true statement that just takes it right down to the core.
Well, Lawrence, one of the things that I wanted to make a point here, and that is the fact that the Constitution was written by the Founding Fathers basically to be our guardian of freedom, to be the protector of the rights of the people. And the only way that the Constitution can do its job is if we, the people, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. The Constitution cannot defend itself. It has to have people to defend it. And in order to have people to defend it, you have to have people that are educated and knowledgeable on the principles of the Founding Fathers and the precepts that went into the writing of the Constitution.
You've read Patrick Henry, obviously. He said, and I'll quote Patrick Henry, "The Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It is an instrument for the people to restrain the government, at least to come to dominate our lives and interests." So this goes back to when the Constitution was brand new, and this obviously was the intention from the beginning with patriots like Patrick Henry. So
let's stop for just a second here, and we've got Ray Hayworth on the line from Arrowhead here in California. Ray, welcome this evening. Would you like to make some comments at this time?
I really don't have anything to add. Thank you, Larry, for the great overview. I've been involved with the artist, Brett Livingston Strong, for over 20 years. As a matter of fact, I just talked with him earlier today. This commission, the monument that Reagan dedicated in Philadelphia, the plaques, Brett did those before I associated with him, and it's been, gads, all these years where the wonderment has been, whatever happened to those? And thank goodness the Spirit of Freedom tour organization has grabbed the ball and running with it. I'm excited, and many, many of us that have collected the artist's work for decades are also looking forward. And yet for me, it's become very personal. As an old-timer that takes responsibility for what has occurred in our government over the last couple decades, I'm taking it as my responsibility to make up for that and pay attention and, well, let's perpetuate how this country was founded and what's made it great, and let's keep it great.
Well, thank you very much for your input there,
Well, thank
Ray.
You, for, Keith, for organizing this. As always, you're definitely a man on the spot. My hat's off to you. Keep moving.
Well, thank you very much. Well, Lawrence, now let me ask you this. Is there an email address or a contact information? If we have some people out there that are listening tonight that are interested in helping to convert your dream into a reality, is there any help that is needed, or any volunteers? Is there anything that any people can do out there to help in the realization of this goal that you have?
I think if we can get 1 million volunteers, we'll figure out a way to use them all. But certainly the way, and I have absolutely no objection to getting emails directly to myself. You can certainly email info@spiritoffreedomtour.org. And it'll get to the headquarters in Richmond. But anyone who wants to email me directly, I would entertain any and all emails. It's Larry.Krieger, C-R-E-E-G-E-R, @spiritoffreedomtour.org. Our toll-free number in Richmond is 800-476-8368. Again, that's 800-476-8368. And we'll entertain phone calls and also entertain emails. It's probably best through the email system because phone calls are a little bit more difficult to handle in large numbers, but we'll take it any way we can get it. And we are looking for groups, for organizations who want to get involved in their local communities, whether it's in Oshkosh or Miami or if it's in any city, any town in America. Because every city, every town in America has schools and has students, both public and private. And this is available for every school in America or in American territory. So,
I would like to encourage anyone that's in the listening audience who is a member of the Rotary or the Elks or the Lions Club or the Kiwanis or any of the other service organizations
right
to seriously consider jumping on board and getting involved in this project, because obviously this is a project that will influence the lives of countless children over many, many years. And frankly, this is a way that your service organization can truly make a difference in the lives of young people and in the process change the course of our nation's future, hopefully helping to restore a lot of the visions of our founding fathers, and having a restoration of the Constitution would be a glorious day for sure. So I'd like to encourage anyone that might be associated with a group of that sort. I'd also like to encourage organizations, for example, I think that the Republican Party would like to perhaps be acknowledged as being the defenders of the Constitution, and I think what better way than for the Republican Party to raise money in their local communities to purchase these monuments to be placed in the schools in their communities. There's obviously so much to be gained, and it's just such an incredibly worthy project. And so I'd encourage everyone to think and to ponder how they can help to place these copies of, or these bronze monuments to the Constitution, the four pages of the Constitution, and also the Bill of Rights.
I can't agree with you more on that. I will say, just for the listening audience, that you know we are apolitical, and we would be more than happy to entertain the Democratic Party as well, and have to raise funds for these plaques we put in schools. So,
right.
I think this is not a political situation. It's strictly apolitical. It's about this country. And, you know, the other day I had someone say to me, well, you know, the Constitution is broken. Why would we want to put it into the schools? And, you know, my answer to that was very simple. Perhaps it's not the Constitution that's broken. Perhaps it's the fabric of American society and our lack of desire or ability to educate our children. And actually, the children of the last two or three generations.
I think it might not be a bad idea to educate the members of Congress also.
I've got a son who's at the University of South Carolina, he's a senior, and fortunately, unfortunately for him, he was 2 years old when I got involved with this project, and he's lived through this for the last 20 years of his life, and he came to me the other day and he said, you know, Dad, I can think of maybe 1.5 days that we discussed the Constitution and Bill of Rights in all of my schooling. And, you know, they concentrate on reading, writing, and arithmetic, but they leave out civics. And maybe it's because they don't teach reading, and the kids can't read the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. But the reality is, if they understood the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they would better understand their ability to determine the legislature, to determine, you know, what it means to elect the president, and what it means to elect their representatives in Congress. If they oppose, if they object to something, then they have to understand what they have to do as citizens to correct that. And if each individual citizen can, because of the Constitution and because of the Bill of Rights, they can make those changes. It may not be immediate, but if they get together and if they understand what they need to do, then they can reshape this country. And have to dispel some of the things that you hear people talking about today, whether it be Democrat or Republican.
So, I do have another caller who is one of our loyal participants, Randy Mack. I'd like to invite Randy to comment if you would like to do so, Randy.
Well, good evening. How's everybody doing?
Hi, Randy.
Great.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to let you guys know, I think that the initiative you guys are jumping on is amazing. In fact, Keith and I have talked about it a few times, and this is something that we're really looking forward to pushing out there and to helping you guys really, you know, achieve your goal of getting this out and into as many, you know, public buildings as we possibly can, high schools, wherever. In fact, the groups that we're forming currently are, you know, it's going to be one of our plans. It's going to be one of our goals and objectives to really help you guys do this.
Awesome.
And I think that the more people that see this and remember what it was, these documents you're talking about, and really see them and really read them, I think the greater understanding will come out there. And I think that we're only in this place because we've forgotten that we were the stewards of our own freedom.
Right.
And maybe these will just help to remind people of that fact itself. So kudos to both. Kudos to you guys and your group. Kudos to you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that very much.
And
it's, you know, the students, the children today, have no concept whatsoever as to what went into the making of the Constitution. They don't understand it. And just like Warren Berger said, if they begin to understand it, then they'll appreciate it more. You know, these plaques are in the hall at Garfield High School in Los Angeles. They've been there since 1989. I did talk to the principal out there about 2.5 years ago, I guess before she retired, and she said there was almost never a day when there weren't kids standing there looking at these plaques in the morning and in the afternoon. And I took that as real encouragement because they're unique. And, of course, when you do this for the first time in a school, it's going to be a very big thing for the school. But don't forget, they're going to be there as long as the school is there. So it's not just this current generation. It's all future generations that will have the opportunity to see those plaques up there when the teachers do take the opportunity to teach the history and the civics, will be able to walk their class out into the hall and stand there and look at the Constitution rather than looking at a book or a piece of paper, which I think makes a big difference.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's the concept. Of course, there's so much more to it than just that. There's so many intricacies as to, you know, what's gone on with these documents over the years, and you know, the fact of the matter is that to create a document such as the Constitution that is capable of going through 300 years of history of one government, and you know, whether you agree with all of it or not, it has a mechanic in it where it can be adjusted to the times, and obviously the times have changed dramatically since the years that this was being contested in the 13 colonies, and it was a contest in the 13 colonies, as you and I discussed the other day. It was a contest as to whether or not it was going to be adopted, and some of these contests it was very close. So I think that to know how difficult it was to actually get the Constitution to be the fundamental fabric of this government, that plays a big role also in the students' desire to learn more and to become more aware of the importance of them. It's the document that protects their freedoms and future generations' freedoms.
If there's any other callers that would like to speak up and ask a question or make a comment, please feel free to do so.
I'd like to ask a question, if I may. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Yeah, my name is Richard Destry. I live in Charleston, South Carolina. And first of all, Larry, I want to thank you so much for developing this amazing plaque initiative. I think it's incredible. I think it's exactly what our country needs right now. I have three high school kids in Charleston right now, and I can assure you that they are not taught civics in school anymore, and they know very little about the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. As a matter of fact, I had at dinner the other night, I asked them all how many pages there were in the Constitution. They had absolutely no idea. I mean, it is kind of scary. But anyway, I just can't imagine. I am so supportive of this program. I just can't imagine a better way to begin to educate our youth and to have them see and read every day in school what are considered to be the most important documents of our generation. Larry, I'm just wondering, I do a lot of business in the Southeast. I travel around some of the major markets in the Southeast, and I'm just wondering if I think so many people are behind this project, but if there's a way that you might be able to give some suggestions of specific things that we can do or I can do or my friends can do to try to support this program to get them in as many schools as we can, for example, in the Southeast. I mean, we all have a limited amount of time, and we can't go to door-to-door to sell in these schools, but I'm wondering if there's a project or a way that we might be able to get these, I guess a way that we can get them in there effectively, most effectively, and cover as many schools as we can, if there's any kind of a program or system that you might have developed that you might be able to share with us.
I'll be glad to. I just want to tell you, Richard, that you shouldn't feel bad about your children, because last year I was in a meeting with three very prominent attorneys, and at a break in the meeting I turned to them and I said, by the way, how many pages are there to the U.S. Constitution? One of them looked at me and said, 20?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think there's only about 8. They had no idea. All three of these prominent attorneys had no idea how many pages there were.
7 articles.
And next, I said to them, how many pages is the Bill of Rights? And they absolutely did not know it was only one page. But more importantly, I said, how many amendments were on the Bill of Rights? And they said 10. I said, no, there were 12. I said, what do you mean there were 12? There was only 10. I said, no, 2 were never ratified. The Bill of Rights, the document, only had 12 amendments on it. The first 2 were never ratified. They went, oh, my God. And they absolutely, in this break, they made me take out a picture of the Bill of Rights. I took a magnifying glass and read those 2 rights to each other just so they'd know what they were. So, you know, they went through law school, and I'm talking Berkeley, and, you know, there's some very prominent law schools, and had no idea of those two answers. But to take the question further, there are a multitude of opportunities. We mentioned the service organizations, and I think that in almost every community around the country, if you want to get involved, then you certainly should be able, you probably know, or if you don't know, you can certainly find a member of one of these service organizations, whether it be Rotarians or Kiwanians or Knights of Columbus or Veterans of Foreign Wars, because they obviously represent a large number of people that would be, I think, very much involved with this, and we are approaching them directly. At the same time, you know, you have an opportunity to go to other organizations, such as doctors and lawyers organizations. They all have organizations in each community, and this would be a great thing for them. I mean, you've got lawyers and who are sometimes not well thought of in the community only because they're lawyers. Well, they can help out significantly by placing these plaques into the schools and show that they're interested in the students learning more about their laws and their freedoms. And at the same time, we've been approached by dozens of different groups around the country who are setting up fundraising parties of their own in order to raise the funds to place them into their children's schools. Some of those go through PTAs. In some cases, the superintendent or the principal of the school is very very much involved, and so on and so forth. So all those things are possibilities. We have materials. We have a very simple and easy to read four-page brochure, and we would be more than happy to send these brochures to any group. If you have 10 or 15 people that will be attending one of your functions, we'll be glad to send you 10 or 15 brochures so that you can have them there for each one of your members. And these brochures are pretty simple to understand what the program is and give you a pretty good definition of what you're looking at.
Larry, may I ask one question? Can
sure.
You hear me?
I can.
Okay, I have one question. I've been to your website. It's a fabulous website, and I would suggest everyone get on that website. Not only does it mention the entire Spirit of Freedom tour, the big picture of this project, but also there's a special link on the home page that will direct you to the plaque initiative. I guess my question to you is, it gives you details about the plaque initiatives, which is excellent because you can share that with anyone else. Are you able to print that? Can that be printed? I mean, can someone at their home print off a brochure from so that they wouldn't have to obviously call you and get brochures from you, but can they print directly off of that website so they can print their own copies and share them with people in their community?
Sure. It's a PDF file, so if they know how to print a PDF file, it shouldn't be any problem. And if they want to call us at the 800 number that I gave out earlier, or send us a quick email, we'll be glad to work them through it. It doesn't come out in brochure form, but comes out in individual pages. So pretty much the same thing that you can hand out to people that are in a group or a meeting that you're having.
Well, one thing I'd like to mention here too, Richard, on Thursday night at 6 o'clock California time, which would be 9 o'clock back in your part of the world.
Right.
We're going to have a very special program on Thursday night. We're going to have a gentleman named Earl Taylor, who is the president of the National Center for Constitutional Studies. He's going to be discussing two of the classic works of a gentleman by the name of W. Cleon Skousen, The 5,000-Year Leap, which has been promoted very heavily by Glenn Beck, and also something called The Making of America. And if you go to my website, that is www.blogtalkradio.com/Keith, K-E-I-T-H, Broders, B-R-O-A-D-E-R-S, you can access the Making of America seminar, which is basically a six-hour seminar going through the principles of the Founding Fathers, the beliefs, the vision, and the concepts that went into the writing of the Constitution. It's a remarkable a remarkable piece of work. Again, it's called the Making of America Seminar, and you can go to the Blog Talk Radio website that I just gave, and you can access these tools. And these are excellent tools for teaching parents and teaching other people about the Constitution and the principles of liberty and individual responsibility. Do we have any other listeners out there that would like to make a comment? We're down to our last 10 minutes. Anyone else have something to say?
I'll add something to what you were just talking about, Keith, if no one else wants to jump in right now. We are going to be providing with each set of plaques a, for better lack of a better word, a teaching manual, and that'll be just a short, again, four-page brochure that will be available for the teachers in each one of those schools. That will give them the history of the plaques and some of the details, some of the less well-known statistics and data about the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights, so that, again, they can make every effort to get their classes involved and interested in these documents. Because the documents themselves are, as you well know, a little tedious to read if you're a sixth grader or a seventh grader. And so you've got to start the process. You've got to get them involved. And, you know, I remember when I was in the sixth grade, I knew nothing about art at that particular time, and I had a teacher who gave us tidbits of about 20 or 30 of the greatest pieces of art in the world. And we actually did an art show. And from that day on, from that class on, I was tremendously interested in art. And here we have an opportunity because there are things about the Constitution that people do not know. You know, they don't know, for instance, that we just mentioned the fact that most people don't even realize that there were actually 12 amendments on the Bill of Rights, and two were never ratified. You know, they probably don't realize that only 9 of the original colonies were involved in the process of ratifying the Constitution. It took 9 colonies to ratify the Constitution. And the oldest member, the oldest delegate from Pennsylvania was Benjamin Franklin. He was 81 years old. The youngest was John Dayton from New Jersey. He was 26 years old. After the attack on Pearl Harbor, the Constitution and Bill of Rights were moved to Fort Knox for safekeeping. That's how amazing it was. There have been over 11,000 amendments introduced in Congress to the Constitution. 33 have been sent to the states for ratification. Only 27 have actually been ratified. So it's not easy to amend the Constitution, but it can be done. And as I mentioned to you the other day, I think there's actually one quote-unquote forgery on the Constitution itself. It's kind of interesting, but John Dickinson from Delaware had a bad case of gout and went home a couple days before the Constitution was ready to be signed. But he was absolutely, you know, critical that his name be on that document. So he asked his good friend George Reed to sign for him. So,
do you know offhand how? I got a quick question here for you. Do you know how many presidential signatures were on the Constitution?
How many presidential signatures?
Yeah, how many men who became president signed the Constitution?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that one.
Well,
do you know the answer?
Yes, yeah, I do. The answer is there were two.
George Washington. And James Madison.
And Madison, because John Adams was serving in England as an ambassador, and Thomas Jefferson was serving in France as an ambassador to France.
Correct.
And so there were potentially 4 men that were obviously prime choices to sign it, but they actually did not. The other question I think is rather interesting is that there were 55 signers of the Declaration of Independence and 37 signers of the Constitution. Does anybody know how many men's signatures appeared on both documents?
And we broke it down to fewer than 10.
Yeah, it was 6.
It was 6.
Roger Sherman, George Reed, James Wilson, Benjamin Franklin, George Clymer, and I'm missing one. There is 6. It's very interesting. There's only 6 duplicate signatures.
And I assume you know that the New York delegation was not at the signing. of the Constitution. However, there was a signer from New York whose name appears in the Constitution, but not signing for the state of New York.
Well, Alexander Hamilton left, but I do believe later he did sign the document. I believe that's the signature that you're talking about.
Yes, he was there and he did sign it, but he signed it as an officer of the delegation, but not as a delegate from the state of New York. So, which I thought was pretty interesting.
And one of the reasons why he left the convention to begin with was the fact that he had made the proposal to the group that the president of the United States should serve for life, as well as the senators should also serve for life. And he was rather offended when his proposal fell on deaf ears. And obviously, being offended such as he was, he decided that he would go home.
Right. I'll tell you one other quote I'd like to throw out there right now as we get towards the close of the broadcast here is from President Ronald Reagan. This is one quote that he used extensively throughout his entire presidency, and I think it's so appropriate. He said, I quote, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Or one day we will spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it was once like in the United States where men were free."
Wow. Beautiful.
Very
beautiful.
Yeah, it's a wonderful statement that he truly believed in. And he and Warren Berger had a wonderful thought and a wonderful concept on the bicentennial of the United States Constitution. It's just too bad that at that particular time in history that there just wasn't as much interest and concern about the Constitution and about the civics of this country. And I think that, quite frankly, since 1986-87, it's caught up. I think that our generation certainly, and the generation that's right after us, I think these generations are beginning to realize what needs to be done, and that's why people our age and on are clamoring to get involved in this project, because they realize that the future of this country lies in the hands of today's student generations and future student generations. It's not going to happen with one generation. It's going to happen with many generations.
One of the things I've done recently is I've created this new group in the community where I live. I live in a town called Yucaipa, California, in the San Bernardino County, and we started a group called the Teenage Patriots of America, and we've got around 25 students at the high school that are going to help me on April 3rd. We're going to go down in front of the grocery stores in our town, and we're going to distribute 10,000 copies of the U.S. Constitution to the residents of Yucaipa, hopefully to motivate and inspire them to read it and to reacquaint themselves with the principles of liberty. We're also going to ask the people who receive the Constitutions, we're going to give them a flyer and ask them if they would please make a donation to the Teenage Patriots of America. The money that we generate from the Teenage Patriots of America will go to fund some scholarships at the high school, and perhaps maybe some of the money could be used for the Spirit of Freedom Black Initiative program.
That would be
wonderful.
I think
we're about out of time.
Let me just reiterate how you can get in touch with us. It's www.spiritoffreedomtour.org, and you can always reach us by phone at 800-476-8368. We look forward to hearing from people. We look forward to working with people and organizations all over the country. And let's get these plaques into the schools.
Well, thank you, Larry, very, very much for your contributions this evening and for your very noble project. I'd like to bid everybody a good evening, and God bless you, and God bless America. Thanks again for participating.
Thank you, and good night.
Thank you.